This is the Welcome to Fatherhood Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! All right, so why don't you go ahead and start by introducing yourself?
My name is John Ogden, and I'm a co-founder at UpliftKids.org. I have two sons. My wife and I are raising our two sons. One's 11, one's 7, and we live in Utah.
So talk to me a little bit about what your fatherhood journey has been so far. What does John's household look like on any given day?
Yeah, I wake up and I get the kids breakfast, and we have conversations over breakfast and get them dressed, I take them to school, and then I go to work. You know, I just work remotely and work from home. And then my wife will go and get the kids from school, bring them home, she'll make dinner, and then she'll put them to bed. And so we kind of split out the responsibilities that way. I'm kind of on the first half of the day, she's on the second half of the day. And it works pretty smoothly. Sometimes we're a bit late getting to school. There's so many little things to do, as any father knows. But for the most part, it seems to be working fairly well day in and day out.
What are those conversations like that you have with your sons over breakfast? Why is that? Is that something that's important for you and your wife to do? Is that something that comes from your past and your childhood growing up?
Yeah, it does come from my past and my childhood. We had breakfast together every morning as a family. And often the conversations were spiritual in nature. And so we carry on some of that. We kind of let the kids take it where they want. A lot of the times my youngest is, like, for instance, very interested in Egypt. And so we'll talk about Egypt and, their approach to life and what's so fascinating about their approach to, death and the afterlife, et cetera. And so it's not extremely structured. It's like a free flowing conversation, the way that we go. But every once in a while, we'll read a story together, probably once a week. You know, we'll read a little story at breakfast, and then have the conversation go where it goes.
You say your youngest is 7.
Yeah.
And interested in Egypt and that kind of stuff. That's impressive.
he got some Egypt books, and he just keeps reading them over and over and over, and it's cool. We're excited to see what happens as a result of his natural curiosity.
So you're behind a very interesting and a very purposeful and meaningful way for parents to engage their children. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Uplift Kids, it helps parents have conversations about spirituality in the home. Our aim is to have it be something that can be useful regardless of what religion a person belongs to or if they don't belong to a religion. So belief or disbelief. We aim to take some of the neuroscience research that has been happening, the psychological research about spirituality, and translate it in such a way that it can work for families. So one psychologist who we like a lot, her name is Lisa Miller. She's a professor of psychology at Columbia University. She writes about studies on spirituality and shows that when kids have a healthy sense of spirituality, they have better well-being. meaning they're less likely to do things that are impulsively harmful to themselves or others. Mm-hmm. And they're more likely to just have a better sense of inner peace. So we kind of take that idea and bring it in the form of lessons that families can use to start conversations about these topics.
So I'm thinking back to 2020 when the pandemic first started, and there was sort of a reverb afterwards where all of the major societal structures and systems were thrusted into the spotlight. And one of them was, you know, like church and religion, and a lot of fallout came from that. Yeah. And then it seemed like simultaneously, it also gave way to a greater sense to talking about spirituality. So at least in the way that I perceive it, there was this shift, this parting of the ways, or this parsing, if you will, between what is religious and what is spiritual. Mm. So where does Uplift Kids fall in that spectrum? And how would anyone who is in either end of that spectrum, or like you said, maybe they're not even falling on that spectrum, how would that be engaging to that family?
Great question. So if a family is attending a religion, we hope that it's really helpful because we broaden the scope of our approach. We pull from Christianity, Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, you know, Islam. We pull from the range of world wisdom traditions. Mm-hmm. And so if a family has like a very strident fundamentalist lens, they say like ours is the only approach that has any validity at all. Mm-hmm. It might not be the right fit. But if a family, you know, even if they're in a particular religion, they say, you know, there's value. We happen to have our beliefs, but there's value in a variety of beliefs. We think it's really fruitful because kids can start to explore this variety of beliefs. And Lisa Miller, she calls it like multilingualism, like being able to speak different languages mm-hmm. of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And so, so even if there is a home belief and a home religion, our hope is that by expanding the scope just a bit, kids can learn more approaches to spirituality. Now, I agree that there was this opening up, a split between religion and spirituality. Mm-hmm. They do overlap, but they aren't. There's a Venn diagram where they overlap, yeah. And there are parts where they don't overlap. Yeah. And so if families can be attuned to that, I think they can start to nurture their kids' authentic spirituality, because one of the principles that I think is so important in parenting that I've noticed in fatherhood is that you can't control exactly who your kid is, nor should you. They're their own being, and you can guide and protect and nurture, but at some level, they're their own identity. And part of the task of fatherhood is to be attuned to who they authentically are and help them be the very best version of themselves. Mm-hmm.
Give me a sense of how Uplift Kids came to be. So sort of like a history of how you gain interest in this area and how this, what would I call it? Organization, approach, program.
Yeah. Yeah, any of those.
Okay, so how it became this program, and why is spirituality important to you? So let's start there first. Sure. How did you get to this place with Uplift Kids?
I participated in this mindfulness community, and it was a community that was centered on meditation and then adult development theory. So a psychological approach to growth in life. Mm-hmm. And I've been with this community for like 6 years, and I did this 9-month program with them where we met over the course of, we met four times over the course of the 9 months in Portland, Oregon, and like practiced meditation and learned about psychological approaches to well-being. And a group of four of us, including me, started talking about this stuff is really good, but we're all grown-ups and we don't know how to translate it for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked for about a year talking about what would this look like. And then we prototyped it with six families. We said, okay, could we translate some of the stuff for kids? We prototyped it with six families, took a bunch of our findings back, then prototyped it with 36 families, took a bunch of our findings, reiterated, and then did like a soft launch last year, and then continued to iterate. Like, how can we really help kids explore spirituality in the home? Because
mm-hmm.
Parents often don't have resources when it comes to this topic of spirituality. Then your second question was about why spirituality?
Yeah.
Lisa Miller's work, she has a book called The Spiritual Child, and it really was hugely influential on us. We mm-hmm. all read it together.
Mm-hmm.
She is showing that this is, spirituality is underrated because I will just pull up one quote from her so I can quote her directly.
Sure.
She says, what our research shows is that deliberately and actively fostering a child's spirituality can have an incredibly positive impact in adolescence. While religion is the traditional way to cultivate this, it can also be achieved with regular time spent in nature, in community service, or with family. It's about fostering the framework, language, and practices for spiritual living. And then she also says, children who are raised with a robust and well-developed spiritual life are happier, more optimistic, more thriving, more flexible, and better equipped to deal with life's ordinary and even extraordinary traumas than those who are not. So we kind of view the idea that spirituality is a foundation to well-being. I don't know if you've seen recently the CDC put out a report that showed that teens are overwhelmingly saying that they feel persistently sad and hopeless. Has nearly doubled in the past roughly two decades, percentage of teens saying. So it's nearly a majority of teens mm-hmm. say that they persistently feel sad and hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that Lisa Miller and others write about. They say like at the same time that teens are saying they feel increasingly sad and hopeless, the percentage of teens and people generally who say they belong to a religion is declining.
Yeah.
And so there's just this great feeling of being unmoored from a spiritual home. With that comes like the allure of consumerism or secularism, just living day to day, trying to amass more stuff. Spirituality is about overcoming feelings of separateness and feeling connected to something beyond yourself. That's really what spirituality is about.
Mm-hmm.
So our hypothesis is, and we're kind of living this question, honestly, is if you get spirituality right, can you alleviate some of these problems with persistent sadness and loneliness? Because then kids feel, okay, life is hard, but I know that there's a field of love, and I'm connected to something beyond myself
mm-hmm.
that has like unconditional love for me. And if they really feel that, our hypothesis is again, we can decrease some of that persistent sadness and loneliness.
If you could have a definition of spirituality, what would that definition be versus how would you define, religion, for instance?
Yeah. Lisa Miller talks about that there are 20 different ways to define it. They did the survey of people who were studying this topic and they could not get to consensus.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is that spirituality is about something that you can't put into words.
I see.
but I think there are approximate definitions.
Okay.
The biggest one for me is connection. So life can feel very lonely and isolating.
Yes.
Especially coming out of a pandemic. Well, we're still roughly.
Well, yeah.
it's been very isolating.
Yeah.
Very lonely for so many people. When you connect on a deep, authentic level with another human being, you can feel it. You can't quite put into words like what makes a deeper connection than like a surface level connection, but you can feel like, oh, there's something really fruitful, peaceful, awe-inspiring, feel grateful, you know, for this deep connection. That's spirituality. So it really is about overcoming feelings of separateness and feeling that connection. Now, that connection can also be connection to God, connection to the divine, connection to nature, whatever word somebody wants to use, whatever their belief system is. It's about like, I am connected to something beyond myself. And when that can really sink in, I think kids don't have like an overwhelming sense of anxiety and nihilism that can be really corrosive.
That sense of connection, and you're right, is so necessary, particularly given this phase that, like you say, we're still in, but more intensely 2020, 2021, just the sense of, like, I don't think there was ever a period in my life where I had to think about the implications of hugging someone versus not hugging someone.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Or shaking someone's hand, or just having any type of appropriate human contact with somebody else.
Yeah.
And I remember reading, I didn't read the whole article, but I do remember reading the heading of this article that popped up on my phone maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago that said that adolescents coming out of the pandemic, even though technically we're still in it, was it adolescents or young children? One of those two categories just lacking basic skills such as like tying your shoelace or just social, just how to be social people and just, you know, hang out in a group and not feel the anxiety that we've all felt over the past several years because of, you know, this big, bad COVID. So it definitely does affect. I think our society has changed in such a way that the need for that deeper connection is one of those things that has been highlighted as a means to like, let's not forget that we're still human, that we're still people, that we can talk to each other, we can be around each other. We're all going through the same thing. So I really find fruitful this aspect of our day and age now where you know, folks are being encouraged to tear down the walls and just be more vulnerable, be more transparent, to talk openly about all of that. What you're saying is that all of that sort of falls into the realm of spirituality and in some way. The connection, I like the way you said it, the connection to something deeper, where one might draw meaning from that connection, whether it's in the sense of community or nature, the divine, in however way someone might define that. There's substance there and getting plugged in that way.
Yeah, that's right. I felt that, like, just the anxiety that's been that surfaced because of COVID. And I think we can all recognize when it happens, when we do feel spirituality. We sense this like abiding peace in our lives that is really fruitful and really can sustain us.
Take me into your growing up at home with your parents, where there are a lot of conversations about religion and or spirituality.
Yeah, a lot. We read from the scriptures every morning and went to church every week. It was a big part of my growing up. It wasn't necessarily framed as spirituality. It was more about the religion. But spirituality was there. It was a component. It's a big part of my life and identity.
We talked a little bit earlier about the overlap between the two. Mm-hmm. Where are some places that you see religion and spirituality can overlap or do overlap?
When a lot of practices in a religion are about nurturing spirituality. So the scriptures, you know, there are verses that do it less than others, but there are definitely verses where it is about gratitude and it is about connecting to something beyond and just the, it's recording an ancient view of connecting to something beyond themselves. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about connecting to the past, like realizing, oh, I'm part of a human species that's been around for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thousands of years ago, they were writing about these things. And so you feel this connection with lineage. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect of scriptures. Singing, you know, for me, that is the thing that perhaps more than anything has been spiritually enlivening, is like gathering together to sing sacred songs. Mm-hmm. Another one is just having vulnerable conversations. And that can happen in a church setting. In Eastern religions, there's often like a meditative component. And just meditating generally can be a tremendous way to access mm-hmm. spiritual experiences. Mm-hmm. Church can sometimes be related to going out in nature. You know, it does happen. There are nature components, not necessarily in the church building itself, but, you know, a church community can go do things in nature.
Yeah.
And then that can also be very fruitful when it comes to spiritual experiences. So there are all these practices that have been developed by human beings who are part of a tradition that has rituals. And they often will nurture spirituality. And that's a big reason why human beings keep doing these things.
So someone is listening to us talk right now and they're interested in finding out more about how to implement this program into their home. What is the process? How would they walk through that process?
We have a lesson library and a curriculum. More than 90 lessons at this point. And you mentioned social skills. That was the one we just barely released, a lesson on social skills this past week.
Okay.
We pulled from the world's wisdom traditions. They unite around the golden rule. So you look at essentially every single one, they have some version of the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Confucius, it's like, do not do to others what you would not have them do to you. But, you know, Jesus said something similar, just the inverse.
Yeah.
Moses said something similar, et cetera. And so we use that kind of lens. Like when you're practicing social skills, can you like center in this ground, the foundation of the golden rule? Can you really sit with how would I want to be treated in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And then from that place, can you learn? We walk through the practical steps of social skills, you know, how to greet somebody, how to talk on the phone,
mm-hmm.
how to interact with somebody online. You know, we do it. Every lesson has a section for teens, a section for kids, and a section for littles, so that a family who has an age range can kind of pick and choose what is applicable for their kids. And we curate the best like videos, mm-hmm. and we curate psychological research, and then games and activities, you know, that some that we make, some that we point parents to, and then like a printout for littles, like a coloring page so they can have something that's more concrete and tangible.
Mm-hmm.
That's our approach lesson to lesson. And like I said, we cover at this point 90 plus topics.
So there's something in there for any member of the family to be able to engage in conversation with. So let's create a hypothetical. I start implementing this in my home. How do you envision this being implemented in the home?
There are a number of ways to do it. One way is to have a regular time, like a sit-down time, 20 minutes a week, where you say, you know, say Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to sit down and we're going to talk through this principle of kindness, this principle of forgiveness, compassion, et cetera. And we're going to just go through the lesson, like beginning to end. So we have an opening activity, then age-specific stuff, then closing activity. And then we have things that you can use to keep the conversation going throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the format. That's one way. Another way is to say, we're going to take just one snippet from this lesson, and we're going to talk about it over dinner. So like beforehand, you know, the parent will go in and say like, okay, I want to watch this 3-minute video and then have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then they just run, you know, just run with the conversation, however you see fit. And then the third way would be the parent just reads the material and then just naturally brings it up in the course of organic conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, you know, I've been reading about this. You know, what do you think about? What do you think about what makes when you should forgive somebody? You know, and so it's organic conversation that's informed by the parent reading the lesson. So those are three approaches that we take. Most of the families that use it most often do that formal, let's sit down once a week.
Okay.
And they kind of hold that in their schedule.
What has been some of the feedback you've received from families who've taken part of this and have started implementing it into their homes?
The feedback has been positive. I can tell you a few. But I mean, I have like one, we get like people writing to us.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a few. So like this person says, my husband and I have different religious beliefs, but it's important to us to have regular family spiritual learning. We call them family chats. We tried to come up with our own lessons, but it was time intensive. It ended up being a lot of mom believes this and dad believes that instead of any actual connection. And I said, when we discovered this, a weight was taken from our shoulders. The lessons are simple enough that our 5-year-old takes a turn preparing them, that have enough layers that our 15-year-old is engaged. So that's one example. And that's what we hope to see is like, we've heard so many people say we have different beliefs.
Yeah.
Mom and dad have different beliefs. And so one option is just like, you don't talk about this stuff ever.
Yeah.
It's like fraught. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, let's just get on day to day to day, you know, but then the kid misses out on the spiritual health that Lisa Miller and others are talking about. And, you know, 10 years go by and you haven't really established that foundation.
Yeah.
And then you're starting to run into possible problems because you've ignored it all. And so rather than ignore it because of differences of beliefs, we hope that this gives people a common ground. Let's see, another one. So this person says, I wanted some guidance on age-appropriate, spiritually minded lessons centered on values, but not from a particular religious tradition. It was also very important to me that lessons be queer friendly. So she says, I began hearing about Uplift Kids. I signed up for a 2-week trial. Quickly realized that I wanted to stay on for the annual membership. The lessons from Uplift felt like a gentle entry point to many of the conversations I most wanted to have with my kids without any sense of guilt or obligations if I didn't make it through the entire lesson. That's another thing. Like, we're just hoping this is like, hey, here's a resource. We're not coming to check it. Did you do it? You know, we're not getting after people. Do it however you want to do it. But recognize that there are lots of resources out there that you might not be aware of that can make it very easy to start these conversations. That's the main goal.
You know, you're reading those feedbacks. I never considered just how spirituality plays into when, you know, in the building of a home. Like, we all believe in something, whether we have a defined way of talking about it, whether we have an abstract way of talking about it. We all believe in something. And so I guess as individual people, we might not necessarily want to talk about it to our friends or something like that. When you start in a relationship with someone, maybe it comes up, maybe it doesn't come up. And then you introduce a kid and it's like, well, well, okay, I guess this is something we should be talking about.
Yeah.
And just to think about how that dynamic plays out in the home can be really interesting. Cause I've spoken to a couple of people in here before who are of, like, mom and dad are of different religious backgrounds. And so the approach that they've taken is, you know, we just leave it open. We're not trying to force anything on our child. This one person that I spoke to, I believe he said that he and his wife, they both go to each other's churches. Mm-hmm. And so they have so that they give their child exposure in that way, without forcing or pulling in one direction more than the other. But this aspect of belief in something transcendent or other is really at the core of the human existence. In my mind, even to, for instance, to deny that there is something other or transcended is also a way of plugging into this sense of, well, maybe there is. You know what I mean? So it is part of the human experience. And I guess I never really thought about why that would be important for children to begin talking and thinking about. So how did you, aside from, you know, you having attended that that retreat and talking to your friends afterwards, but was there anything else that sort of made that, like, gap very crystal clear? Like, you know, our kids or children should be encouraged to engage more in this conversation.
Yeah. I don't remember when it struck me, but this idea struck me that I think is true. And it is that there's going to be a day when even if you give your very best efforts as a father, your kid isn't going to be able to rely on you. They're going to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, and it's part of growing up, you know,
yeah.
You find that happens.
Yeah.
It's just natural.
Yeah.
How are they going to feel like that they have ground beneath them?
Hmm.
And they have, like, a field of love and support. And so this realization, like, okay, I can do everything I could possibly do, and still my kids are going to have to live on their own.
Yeah.
And I want to prepare them such that when they live on their own, they know that they have ground beneath them. They know that they have a field of love. They know that they have ancestors and lineage who are all supporting them. You know, there is something that has unconditional love in this world, despite all its grief and hardships.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that my kids can sense that and really feel that, so that they can have the strength to navigate what will certainly be a difficult life. I am motivated because I've seen glimpses of this and felt moments of what I might say spiritual clarity
mm-hmm.
in my life mm-hmm. that have sustained me through hard times. And so it's kind of that personal experience that makes me want it for my kids. Now, I'll also add that the internet has made it easy to see the flaws in traditional religion.
Yeah.
And so I've experienced that as well.
Yeah.
What I thought was the absolute truth, you know, I discover through various means, books and online means, like, oh, okay, maybe the way I grew up isn't the only way of viewing the world.
Yeah.
You know, having conversations on a global scale,
yeah,
seeing other people's views and being like, well, their view has validity too.
Yeah.
That's only going to become more and more common for the next generation. And so my anticipation is that, I who knows if this is right or not, my anticipation is that that trend of people leaving traditional religion will probably continue.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's something so valuable in these wisdom traditions
mm-hmm.
that shouldn't be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what is driving us at Uplift, is like, can we keep the best of these traditions alive and integrate them with the best emerging science of spirituality? So we're coming up from an informed and global perspective,
yeah,
anticipating that this is the direction that kids are going to naturally want more and more as time goes on.
I'm going to invite you to share, if you will, one of those moments where you felt a glimpse of spirituality that has stayed with you till now.
Sure. One that comes to mind was at a scout camp. And we had this one night where we all had like a chip of wood we were holding, and we were standing around a fire, and we were invited to say a person that we were grateful for and why,
mm-hmm.
and then put our chip of wood in the fire. So we each did that. And, you know, it was just very vulnerable, heartfelt, shares.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sang, some hymns.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were invited to go, you know, this is a week long scout camp. This was on Thursday. So we'd been away from home for 4 days. We were invited to go off away from the fire, just by ourselves, each individually. And they gave us a letter that our parents had written before the camp.
Hmm.
And it was a letter to each of us, you know. And so read both the letters and then just kind of sat and looked at the stars.
Mm-hmm.
The stars were visible
mm-hmm.
so far away from the city. There was no light pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And just felt this sense of like unconditional love I talked about. Like, no matter what goes wrong in my life, there's this sense of unconditional love.
Yeah.
And the most amazing thing to me about that experience is like a lot of the petty stuff that I'd been wrestling with as a teen, like thinking about, just kind of melt, my desire for those things just kind of melted away.
Hmm.
There's kind of like very clear sense of how to be a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
The desire to be a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lived with me for who knows how long, that desire just continued, based on that experience. So that's one example. But to me, a powerful personal example.
Yeah.
Like a shift, a swerve, you know, in my life that I want for my kids to have some sort of experience like that as well.
Absolutely right, that there comes a point, and I believe this is true for every single person, there comes a point where life sets you up for that potential moment to happen. Whether it's at a camp, whether it's life sort of bringing you to your knees, it could be in the most unexpected way. The birth of a child. I mean, that there are very few spiritual moments than the birth of a child. Mm-hmm. And that moment for me, I often talk about it. I remember very clearly just how at what time was my son born? He was born on a Tuesday at like 2:32. At 2:31, I was someone else. At 2:32, I became a completely different person. You know, just seeing my son born just completely transformed everything. And I can certainly think of a time in my life where I did not feel like there was solid ground underneath me. And life certainly, you know, by my own doing, life just sort of handed me a huge blow. And had it not been for those deep connections and some sense of spirituality, I grew up in a home, a very religious home. Both of my parents, but more so my mom, a very religious person. I remember as far back as like 5, 6, 7 years old, waking up early in the morning and my mom teaching us to memorize some of the Psalms and singing some of the hymns. And she would have this little lesson book from our church, and they had what they called a memory verse. And so she would read that and would repeat after her, and then would have to memorize it. And so come Friday, during the last day of that lesson, she would see which one of us was able to recite the memory verse by memory, you know, without like with the least amount of errors or whatever. And so those memories are very ingrained in my mind. And so me personally, I find meaning in those deep connections. I find meaning in spirituality. I find meaning in reading scripture and understanding it and talking about it. That's a lens that I see the world through. I also had a major shift in 2020, when everything seemed like it was shifting, and the way that I now approach my belief system and how I challenge my own belief system and learn to unlearn some of the harmful things and learn to relearn some useful things, becoming more empathic towards people whose religious or spiritual outlooks differ from mine. But I say all that to say, what I'm getting from what you're saying is that Uplift Kids is about establishing the fundamentals of how to be a good person.
Yeah.
I mean, in a moment of society that's not so far removed, and quite honestly, we're still living in it, just to see how nasty people are and how irreverent, in the sense of there is no consideration necessarily for human life. There's no consideration for human identity. There's no consideration for differences of opinion in some of the most elevated offices of our country. Like, that is just not a thing. And to see how that trickles down and how this people group, you know, that uphold this particular belief are just like spewing hate and stuff at this other people. And it's like, man, I thought we were a civilized society, but we're more barbaric than the barbarians themselves. Like, this is crazy to me. A lack of these values has been thrusted into the spotlight. And I like that there is something that is targeting, or I don't want to say targeting, but there's something that is available for people who will one day grow up to be adults and to begin to have those type of conversations from an early age in a way that is age appropriate, in a way that caters to the developmental phase of that person as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult. I think that's pretty cool, man. I think that is pretty cool. So all that to say, kudos on the work that you at Uplift Kids and the whole staff are doing, because this is really needed stuff.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So how can someone find this really helpful tool if they're interested in it?
Our site is upliftkids.org. And you can go read through what we do, see our lesson library, see if the lessons are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You can also sign up to get a free lesson emailed to you. And then we'll send weekly insights as well. Mm-hmm. So you can just follow along and see if it fits what you're looking for. We also have a 2-week trial, so people can get full access to the lesson library, check it out, go through a lesson or two with the family. If it fits, great. If it doesn't fit, that's fine as well.
Yeah.
We recognize that there are many approaches. That's just one of many.
Yeah.
So that's how you do it. Upliftkids.org.
Upliftkids.org. Awesome. Man, I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to touch on or talk about.
No, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the presence that you bring to these interviews. I just feel a sense of groundedness in talking to you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to you.
Matt, thank you for making the time to be able to talk about Uplift Kids, and again, the value of what these lessons and what this approach is, I think, is self-evident, but I'm sure that it will become much more so when someone begins to engage with the material. So my hope is that many of the people who are listening would at least be curious enough to give it a try. And like you say, if it fits, awesome. If not, perhaps not now, but at some point down the line, it might be a good fit. Well, John, thank you so much, man, for your time, and all the best to you and your family moving forward.
Thank you, guys.
Check.
Thank you.